So, tonight I'm going to start back where we had last week during the Teisho started or touched upon, which was the root of what this practice has come from, how this practice arose. And in a sense, why we're doing it, because they're the same thing. So last week I talked about suffering and how this practice, which was originated with, perhaps not even originated with, but really refined to the point where it became something that was handed down to us in this form by a historical person called Shakyamuni Buddha, originated from the Buddha's suffering, difficulty, struggle, both within himself and what he saw in the world. Without going too much into the history of it, the Buddha was motivated by suffering to find out what the solution was. Coming out of his experience, and one of the very first things that the Buddha taught was what we now call the Four Noble Truths. So I'll just recite them to you in the way that I like to describe them. But the first noble truth is that life is suffering. Or perhaps to put it better, there is suffering. There is suffering. The second noble truth is that suffering arises out of comparison-mindedness. Or, if you want to get even more basic about it, you could say that suffering has a cause. The third noble truth is that the cessation of comparison-mindedness brings about the cessation of suffering. Or, if you want it to be more basic in your way of expressing this, there is a way to end suffering. Suffering can come to an end. And the fourth noble truth is that there is a path to the cessation of comparison-mindedness and suffering. And that path is the path that was initially delineated by the Buddha and greatly refined and evolved over the 2,500 plus years from the time of the Buddha, 500 BC, in that time period, to this present moment, 2013, here in America, sitting in the sendo. So I want to talk a little bit about this path, and now add in a second concept, which is the concept of the absolute, the absolute. So let's go back to these Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. Now, that seems obvious to all of us. We can see it all around us. It's in the news. We have felt it many times in our own life. Life throws curveballs. There's a bumper sticker, life sucks and then you die. But this is really kind of a revelation. It's a revelation for each human being at some point who reflect upon life and realize that one suffers, which is not simply feeling pain, but one suffers. There's a deep dissatisfaction, an incompleteness, a sense of something lacking that is very fundamental. Every human being that is reflective enough to end up in a zendo like this, at some point along the way, gets this. It's not automatic, it's not intrinsic. You're not born knowing this. Matter of fact, hopefully, growing up with a reasonable childhood where you're not abused and where you don't feel terrible pain right from the start, hunger and deprivation, etc., etc., there comes a point along the way, perhaps sometimes during childhood, perhaps in your teenage years, where there is usually an acute awareness of this thing called suffering. Now, the Buddha said that suffering has a cause, and the cause is traditionally described as craving or desire, but which I think is better described as comparison-mindedness. Comparison-mindedness is the root of this desire, this craving. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that rather than take the world as it comes, we apply ideas to the world and compare these ideas or descriptions or characteristics to something in our mind that is idealized, something that we would like it to be, that we think it ought to be, that it should be. And holding these two up next to each other, when there's a mismatch, that brings about suffering. The sense that something's wrong, something's not right, I can't accept this. It goes on and on. Why me? Why did they do this to me? Why is life so unfair? And all the rest of it. This is seeing the world in a so-called relative way, things being compared to other things, dividing lines being drawn in, opposites being added in, such as good and bad, right and wrong, should and shouldn't, etc., etc. Now, the Buddha said that there is a way to end suffering, and that suffering comes about from the ending of comparison-mindedness, which is this state of being stuck in relativity, in descriptions, in maps, in dividing lines, in opposites, in comparisons, all of which we could call comparison-mindedness. The Buddha said when that is ended, suffering ends. This is where the word absolute comes in. This is the absolute side of one's experience, of the world. It is the world before the dividing lines are drawn in, before comparisons are made, before descriptions are applied, before opposites are concocted. It is, in fact, the actual world, the original world. This is the world that we enter when we sit down and do zazen. This is the absolute world. Now, the relative world, the world of comparison-mindedness, depends entirely upon thinking and what we call conceptualizing. There's an action of mind, of the thinking mind, applied to the world. Often this action is unconscious. It's automatic. It's so deeply learned. It's so deeply ingrained. We don't see it as added on. We see it as intrinsic. We believe that there really is the differences that we have concocted, such as right and wrong, good and bad, should and shouldn't. The thinking is so automatic, so deeply ingrained, that we don't see it as something that we have either learned or created or both. And as a result, an occurrence happens. There's a mismatch between the way things actually are and the template to which we compare it, and then we have this experience called suffering, which is incompleteness, wrongness. Something's wrong out there, something's wrong in here. Now, as I said last week, that is not necessarily a bad thing. Let's not apply good and bad to this. It's just the way it is. You could call it the human condition. And there's a benevolent side to it, because when there's this suffering, it is so painful, it is so uncomfortable, that it impels us to try to find a way beyond it. The way that we often find to get beyond it is to grasp onto something and reject something and ignore something, so-called three poisons. We have an idea of what will make us better. We try to chase after that, hold on to it, cling to it. More money, more status, more security, more guns, whatever it is in that particular moment for that particular person. Or there's a rejecting attitude. If only I get rid of this thing confronting me. If only I destroy it. So we oppose things in our life, things that are inevitable, that could not have been any different right now, but they are opposed. We fight with our life. And we don't really get out of our suffering this way. It's like being caught in one of those Chinese finger toys where you keep pulling and pulling and it just gets tighter and tighter. And then ignoring is a similar kind of thing. Rather than oppose something, we hide from it, we run from it. We bury it under, very often, substances that dull our senses, habitual activities, addictive behaviors. So this is the ordinary way of approaching suffering. And unfortunately, it not only doesn't work, but it perpetuates suffering. Because it doesn't put us in contact with this absolute side of the world. It perpetuates the sense of division. And the most profound division it perpetuates is the division between me and the situation. I am opposing the situation. The more I oppose it, the more alone I feel, the more beset upon I feel. And this becomes a vicious circle. So the Buddha found a different way. As a result of deep questioning, deep meditation, going deeply within to try to find the very core, the source reason for suffering. And through his awakening, he got it, that there is an original, absolute world. A world before all the ideas, all the dividing lines, all the concepts of good, bad, right, wrong, should, shouldn't, etc., etc. And that in this original world, yes, there is pain. Yes, there is difficulty. Yes, there is struggle. But suffering does not arise because comparison-mindedness doesn't arise. Therefore, opposition doesn't arise. The dividing line between me and the experience doesn't arise. And although the experience might be exactly as it is when I am making comparisons, because there's no opposition, because there's a very clear seeing of it, the situation resolves itself much better, much more completely, because of the energy liberated from this futile opposition. So Zazen teaches us to enter this absolute world. So in Buddhism, the word Buddha both refers to a historical person, as we just discussed, and also an awareness, a reality. Sometimes it's called Buddha mind. So it's not the historical Buddha, but it's the essence of what we are. It's our Buddha nature. So this Buddha nature has been described as having three bodies. So I want to talk a little bit about these bodies of Buddha nature. The first body of Buddha nature is called Dharmakaya. The second body is called Sambhogakaya, and the third body is called Nirmanakaya. So these are the bodies of the real Buddha. Now, the historical Buddha is an individual who had particular karma, a body, a history. Through awakening, the Buddha realized the essence of Buddha nature and actually said, all beings have Buddha nature. So this is the Buddha we're referring to now, is your nature, my nature, the essential nature of each being. In this absolute world where comparison-mindedness does not arise and therefore suffering comes to an end. So in this Buddha, there are three sides to it, according to the teachings of Buddhism. The first side, and the reason I bring this up is only because it may help us, not to create concepts and not to create beliefs. The first side of this Dharmakaya, meaning the body of reality, the body of Buddha, this Dharmakaya is the hidden aspect. It's the part of this body of Buddha that is obscured by the forms of the world, our attachment to these forms, our thinking about these forms, our enthrallment with these forms. So by becoming enthralled with the forms of the world, we miss this Dharmakaya, this body of Buddha, what's called the truth body. What is this truth body? How do we approach it? In our zazen, when we go into an intimate place, when using our practice, we go deep within, let the thoughts settle down, go to the very source of the mind. That is Dharmakaya. So, in doing our practice, we can see the form of the practice, for example, mu, or breath. It takes a particular form. It has characteristics. There's a sensation of breathing. There's a thought sound of mu. As we go deeply into that, we can begin to see that there's a part of that, an aspect of that, that is absolute. It's its fact. The form it takes is dependent upon causes and conditions. It's connected to the entire fabric of the universe. The breath happened this way at this particular moment because of your body, because of all of the factors surrounding you that led to this particular breath. But the actuality of it, the fact of it, that is not determined by karma. That is always there. There's a koan that says, what is the Dharmakaya? And the teacher says, the Dharmakaya is without form. This is the formless side of our practice. This is the fact of the world. This is the intimate side of our practice, where we go deep within, before any particularity. So this Dharmakaya nature. Now, in what way is it absolute? It can't be compared to anything else. It doesn't have any particular form, any particular color, any particular sound. It is the ground of these particularities. It is the source of these particularities. When we enter this space deeply, it can't be compared. It is the very basis. In Buddhism, it's often called the source with a capital S, or it with a capital I, or thusness. So this is one side of this triple so-called body of Buddha, one aspect of it, the formless side of it, the Dharmakaya. Now there's another koan, and the student asks the teacher, the physical body decomposes. What is the indestructible Dharmakaya? What is this indestructible truth body of Buddha, source body of Buddha? And the teacher answered, mountain flowers are like a golden brocade. Flowing mountain rivers are blue as indigo. A strange answer. Answer with things that take form, that have karma, that are caused by other things, that are interconnected with the fabric of space-time. How is that Dharmakaya? Anything you experience is manifesting Dharmakaya. You can't escape Dharmakaya. No feeling is apart from Dharmakaya. No idea is apart from Dharmakaya. No struggle is apart from Dharmakaya. No pain is apart from it. No suffering is apart from it. How do we work with this? How do we use it? Any situation in your life that you are holding up a template to, therefore suffering over, be it a big deal or a small irritation, has form, color, sound, smell, taste, thought, nature, is dependent upon karma. Now, when we clearly see that exactly how it's manifesting is the product of causes and conditions, could not have been any different right now because it is a product, because it did not arise independently. Therefore, its particularities, we can say, are in a sense irrelevant. They're irrelevant to me because they had to be the way they are right now. So why am I struggling with it? Why am I comparing anything to it? Yet, it is, it manifests this being nature. So when I am confronted by a situation that I find myself comparing, opposing, suffering over, I become aware of this other side of it. It's fact. The fact has no particular color, no particular sound, no particular thought. It's like, there it is. In order to do this, we have to have strong Zazen practice. We need to do this in our Zazen. We need to go to this intimate place. We need to do our practice and see this black side, see this flip side. This is the Dharmakaya side. This flip side is absolute. It can't be compared to anything. It came before. Another way to think of this is, if you took this entire karmic body of Buddha, all the forms of the world, cause and effect, and you ran it backwards to the very, very beginning, all the way to the singularity, where every single thing that is now, including space, time, all the people in the world, all the thoughts, all the history that ever happened, was all in one dimensionless point. There was no variegation, there was no front or back, there was no inside or outside. There was no before or after. There wasn't even any present. It was just this one thing. This is how everything started. All you can say is this one thing is is. You can't say anything else about it. Now, this is, for whatever reason, no one will ever be able to say, expanded out to form this whole world. Every single thing in this world is a manifestation of this original substance. This is substance. That is Dharmakaya. That is the Dharmakaya body of Buddha. Now, what is the Sambhogakaya body of Buddha? So, Hakuin said the Dharmakaya is your nature. The Sambhogakaya is your wisdom. What is this wisdom body? What is this? The Sambhogakaya is the world as it actually presents before any idea about it, before any dividing lines have been drawn in, before any comparisons are made. So where you might say the Dharmakaya, from the standpoint of Zazen, is an absolute samadhi state, going into the very center of one's mind, the most intimate place. The Sambhogakaya is the world as it presents before any ideas are made of it. It's the actual, original world of karma. Now, Sambhogakaya is absolute, meaning there is nothing opposed to it, nothing aside from it, nothing apart from it, meaning there is no self apart from it. You are this Sambhogakaya. There is no entity standing apart. The entity that seems to be standing apart, when you look for the borders, you can't find them. It's completely interpenetrated with this world that appears to be outside, utterly interdependent with it. Anything that happens within has an effect on without, and vice versa. If you try to find that dividing line, you can't find it. If you try to find the entity, all you find are phenomena, exactly like watches, floor, lights. When you try to find the entity called me, all you find are phenomena, exactly like everything else. This is Sambhogakaya. So in our Zazen, when we become one with the practice, from the beginner counting their breath, one, two, three, to the student working on the koan mu, mu, mu. When you become one with your practice, that is Sambhogakaya. Whether or not you know it, that is Sambhogakaya. When you know it, you realize that there is no self at all. There's no need for that entity called me. The world does not need that as a crutch. In other words, seeing is embedded in sights. Hearing is embedded in sounds. It does not need a knower. It does not need a seer. And this state of awareness is called Sambhogakaya. Now I'll mention the third body of Buddha. The third body of Buddha is called Nirmanakaya. So Hakuin said, the Nirmanakaya are your activities. Once again, the Dharmakaya is your wisdom. Dharmakaya is your nature. The Sambhogakaya is your wisdom, the wisdom of knowing that it's just this, just. Self drops away. This is the state of no self. And Nirmanakaya are your activities. What does this mean? This is how the Zen student conducts themselves in their everyday life. Nirmanakaya is the world of action, activities. It is wholeheartedness, throwing yourself completely into your activity, not standing apart, not judging, not hesitating. When you're cutting carrots, it's just cutting carrots. And then the phone rings, it's just answering the phone. And you stub your toe on the way to the phone and it's just, ow! This is this world of Nirmanakaya, it's this activities. So there's a famous saying, of the Buddha from the Diamond Sutra. He said, develop a mind that abides nowhere, that gets stuck nowhere. In other words, develop a flowing mind. This flowing mind of continual attentiveness in a very simple way, wholeheartedly, is this nirmanakaya, this moment by moment living through your life. Now, I will add to that two words, nothing special. It doesn't stand out. No one can see it. If you know it, even then it's not perfected. It's living your life actually, wholeheartedly, authentically. There's nothing added on. The minute you become aware of it, you've already stepped out of it. And our zazen is essential to being able to live this way. It's this continual attentiveness. So once again, to just summarize, this dharmakaya, these three bodies of the absolute world, the dharmakaya is the intimacy of your zazen. The sambhogakaya is the just side of it. Just this. And the nirmanakaya is the wholehearted plunging into your life without a second thought. Nothing special. Integrated into your life. No one can detect it. These are the three bodies of Buddha and the three sides to our practice. And the way to enter this absolute world so that we can fulfill the Buddha's statement that there is an end to suffering. And the path is through this absolute world, leaving behind the relative world of comparisons and dividing lines. So I hope that was helpful. And we will end there tonight.